The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Welcome into Brad Sessmatt, the Brad Sessmatt Show. I am Jordan Hamm. We're here on Sports 360 AZ, wherever you might be joining us over podcast form, live on the stream. We appreciate you joining us. Have a lot to get to. A lot of football this weekend. Had wild card weekend. Six games. Felt like I didn't get up from the couch very much this past weekend. We also have the national championship tonight. A lot going on. And so we have a lot to get to. Steve Palazzolo, Pro Football Focus, will be joining us. And we're just gonna jump right in. The rundown, this show brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, we appreciate their support. I think the big thing that everyone's gonna be talking about in the sports world looking back this weekend are those NFL playoffs. I had a lot going on. The Bills, the Colts kick things off with a very good game, 27-24. Rams and Seahawks, an interdivisional battle. Washington, you saw a backup quarterback come in and really kind of put it to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but the Bucs able to escape. Ravens and Titans, that's always kind of a fun game. I feel like those are two, the bare-knuckle brawlers of the NFL. The two, I liken it to in pool basketball, you have the people that might try to splash you on defense. Some people might try to drown you. Those are the two teams that usually are trying to drown you, the Ravens and the Titans. And they didn't disappoint. 2013, kind of a grinded out game. Saints and Bears, kind of on the field, kind of a clunker a little bit. The Saints kind of just took care of business. Pretty easy going for them. But want to talk about them a lot here in just a little bit. And then Browns and Steelers wrapping up a really good weekend. Browns jumping out 28-0 in the first quarter. Steelers started to climb back into that a little bit. Ended up being 48-37. So a lot to sift through, a lot to go over. But really some of the big things that jumped out to me. Steelers started, 8-0? We're kind of the cream of the crop in the NFL. This was a team that could not be touched. And then they just stumbled along the way, really struggled. And this was a team that, it's like, all right, could this be a 16-0 team? Probably not. But this is a team that means business. And look, the Browns are much like the Steelers are stumbling at the wrong time. Browns are hitting at the right time. So I think that was a big reason as to why Baker Mayfield came out. But it was a lot of just self-inflicted errors early on. And, with playoff teams, you give them enough rope, they're going to hang you. That's essentially just what it is. But Browns, great to see them win a playoff game. What is it, the first time 16 years, 26 years? Like, it's been so long. Baker Mayfield able to get it done for the Browns with the Saints and the Bears. So this game was not the best on the field, but I would argue it's the most entertaining game of the entire weekend because they had a broadcast on Nickelodeon. They had a separate crew with a Nickelodeon star in there. You had Noah Eagle doing play-by-play, Nate Burleson. Nate Burleson, like, one of the most versatile guys in broadcasting. He has really exploded going from a former wide receiver now to a broadcaster. He's on Good Morning Football, that great show on the NFL Network every single morning. He's doing usually pregame, the studio show with CBS, and can kind of turn it on the dime where it's kind of like the fun NFL show, NFL Network, but giving analysis, showing his personality and to kind of just nuts and bolts. And then he's doing a Nickelodeon game. And on touchdowns, they had CGI'd slime cannons. They had, when there were penalties, Sheldon, young Sheldon, popped up and explained the rules for the kids. And such a good move for the NFL. I think a pretty good move for Nickelodeon. Ratings are doing fine, but you want to, the past couple of years for football, whether it's concussions, whether it's Colin Kaepernick, whether it's, whatever. It seems like there's a louder and louder swell of, I'm not so sure about football from the public. And it might be still a small minority, but the best way to get kind of those next generation of fans is to have Tommy Pickles in the stands, to have Reptara. I know I'm hitting a lot of Rugrats. That show hasn't been on in a while, but they're having SpongeBob involved. SpongeBob popped up when a field goal was getting kicked. It was so entertaining. Sean Payton got slimed after the game. Cameron Jordan of Chandler High School of the Saints had a post-game interview, and he was trying to slime coach. It was like the perfect it was very well executed. I'll put it that way. They had the MVP, which I believe was the Nickelodeon valuable player. Mitchell Trubisky won that, even though I think he threw for about 180 yards and had a garbage time touchdown, and that was it. But it was just like very, I don't know. After the week that we had last week, I think having a little bit of innocence helped. I was wondering when they were going to talk about Bountygate, when they were going to talk about what was going to happen. They dropped an F-bomb on air. How did they explain that? What did they do? Obviously, it's not going to be a perfect fit, but got me thinking, how can they do like a Breaking Bad or Walking Dead themed game? You know, what other networks are going to try to get in on this? You know, I saw some jokes where it was Pac-12 Network might be on Cartoon Network after it's all said and done. That actually might be a step in the right direction. Who knows? But that was something different and well executed, and it was cool to see. I feel like a lot of these leagues have obviously had to turn on a dime this year with how they execute things. And I think for the four majors, for the most part, they did a pretty good job. But I think the NFL has been able to separate themselves, not only doing this, but how they executed the draft. When we were a month into this pandemic and we didn't know how any of this was going to work, that broadcast could have gone off the rails. It usually could go off the rails when it's in its normal setting. But there was so much remote access that had to happen and all these sorts of things. And the NFL was able to take care of it, and they did. And they've been able to show time and time again they can execute the marketing side of things. So that's why they're the behemoth that they are. Moving on from NFL, Phoenix Suns had a rough game against the Pistons, but then bounced back nicely against the Pacers in the fourth quarter. It was the team showed that killer instinct that good teams have. It was, a very close game kind of entering the fourth quarter. And then, when you look at the grand total, 35-30, they outscored the Pacers in the fourth quarter. But it was one of those where it was just like, okay, we're going to, step on their neck and finish the job. Like that, it went from a very close game all of a sudden to a not close game at all. And Mikal Bridges, 34 points. This guy is blossoming into what was an up-and-coming player, all of a sudden into, I think he's approaching star status if he keeps it up this year. He's playing like an all-star. He's not turning the ball over. I read a good article by Jay Diefenbach kind of going into the analytics. He's second in the league in terms of hanging on to the basketball. He's top 25 in terms of defending. He's doing everything the Suns wanted him to do when they drafted him. They didn't need him to necessarily be the big star. They needed a 3-and-D guy. They needed him to play defense. They needed him to take care of the basketball. He's doing all of those things and doing those at a much higher level than I think people anticipated early on in his career. So all of a sudden it's like the big three that every NBA team is going after. Is it Devin Booker, Chris Paul, and now approaching Mikal Bridges status? Everyone thought it might be DeAndre Ayton. He very well could still be that. But Mikal Bridges is playing at such a high rate and being so dominant with the way that he plays. It's been very impressive early on. And as we look now, they're going to face off against the Wizards here. That's tonight at 5 p.m. Arizona time. And then you have the Hawks coming up. And it's winnable games. And it's funny how quickly it goes from, this team is just kind of like drudging through the season. All of a sudden, 8-0 in the bubble. And then they should win these games against bad teams. team. They should take care of business. 7-3 so far on the year. Been very impressive. So a lot going on. We'll get more into the college football playoff. The national championship is tonight. Ohio State, as well as Alabama. A lot's going on. Gonna talk a little, maybe a little bit more Suns here. But coming up next, we have Steve Palazzolo. Pro Football Focus does a tremendous job. He is the host of the Pro Football Focus NFL podcast, and he is going to break down this wild card weekend. Who's set up the best to go ahead and win this division round? And then also what went wrong with the Cardinals? Where do they go from here? Has some interesting insight there. So that's coming up next here on the Brad Sussmat Show. Welcome back to the Brad Sussmat Show. I'm Jordan Hamm filling in for the big guy. And it's been a busy weekend on the football front with the NFL playoffs. Wild card weekend, plenty going on. So we wanted to have Steve Palazzolo of Pro Football Focus, the host of the PFF NFL podcast, join us and talk all things NFL football, the gridiron. Steve, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
So six games this past weekend, a lot to digest. First off, just what jumped out to you first from this weekend, these six games?
I thought overall the football was good. I thought it was really entertaining. I mean, I thought the Bears-Saints game was the only one I felt was a little lopsided, even with the Browns-Steelers. I know that ended up crazy, but it wasn't like Browns fans weren't a little scared at one point in the third quarter with the potential comeback. So I thought the football was good. You know, the NFL took a chance, adding an extra wild card team, adding that extra two games to the weekend. And I think they did a good job. I think the NFL found a good formula, which had people probably glued to their seats Saturday all day and Sunday all day. So it was a fun weekend and probably, you know, a nice addition to wild card weekend.
When you look at these matchups, you mentioned the Browns was a bit of a blowout, but got close. A lot of competitive games. I think really the one that jumped out to me was the Rams, in which they started with John Wolford and then eventually Jared Goff. But what surprised you about this weekend? What caught your eye in terms of that?
I mean, it was certainly the way the Browns game unfolded. It was a lot of craziness in that one, as far as nobody's predicting a 28-0 lead in the first quarter. There was some quirky stuff there. I think overarching surprise, though, Taylor Heinicke with Washington. I mean, that was one of the most incredible performances of the entire weekend, maybe the best we saw from any quarterback. And I think, you know, the football team has a good defense, and I figured that they would be able to keep it close defensively. But as soon as you hear Alex Smith isn't going to start and Heinicke's getting to the start, it's like, all right, this could be a blowout. And he just made play after play after play, big time throws down the field, plus that incredible run for a touchdown, just absolutely balled out. And I think maybe made a ton of money in that game. You know, he's going to be at worst a backup for life right now in the NFL and probably competing for starting jobs, maybe even in Washington. So Heinicke's performance, which kept Washington close, I think absolutely the biggest surprise of the entire weekend.
As we look ahead to this divisional round, obviously when you have the buys, that gives you an advantage. But now that it's just one team from each conference getting that bye, how much do you think that helps their case as we move on into divisional weekend?
Well, there's absolutely the health component, you know, just staying healthy, no risk of injury, being able to evaluate a team for another week. I think teams with byes, usually they win because they're better teams. I don't know if that's an advantage here because, look, the Chiefs are the best team, I think, in the AFC, but boy, these teams getting close. The Bills are really good all around. I love the way the Ravens are trending. They're going to have to, if the Chiefs win against the Browns, they're going to play either the Bills or the Ravens, and that's going to be a tough one. So, look, you get the advantage of just not having to play, getting your guys rested and ready to go, and I think that's the biggest thing. But as far as the reason why most teams win coming off the bye, they're generally a better team. But in the Chiefs and the Packers case, too, there's a lot of competition in the NFC, so I think it's going to be a good one.
As we look at the Cardinals season, looking back year two of the Cliff and Kyler era, a lot of progress, but I think still in Arizona, a lot of sour taste in the mouth with when you look at the last couple of weeks when they were really able to control their own destiny and not deliver. How did you assess how the Cardinals were able to progress and where do they go from here?
Yeah, I mean, it was really promising, obviously, early in the season. There was the point where the NFC West was a three-way tie with the Cardinals, the Rams, and the Seahawks. And then, you know, Cardinals kind of went the other way from the other two teams. So I think that's disappointing. I think from a macro view, Kyler Murray took a big step forward. I love the way they used him in the run game. I think a part of the Cardinals taking that step back was because of Kyler's injury and not being able to use him in the same capacity. But I think you saw at least the potential for that offense. It's inconsistent still. Murray needs to become a better intermediate thrower, that 10 to 19 yard range. I think the scheme needs to do a better job of giving him those opportunities. So I think you see the growth, but you also see the growth areas offensively. And I think defensively, like every team in the NFL, my advice is get more corners, get more guys who can cover. And that's literally every team. And if you look at the teams still around in the NFL, playing right now, from the Rams to what the Packers have, just depth at cornerback is huge. The Ravens do a great job with that. The Bills have done a good job with that. So I think that's what the Cardinals need to assess, as Patrick Peterson's a free agent, as they can improve on the back end, building that team from back to front, being able to stop the pass first in a pass heavy league. I think that's something for Arizona to look at going forward.
So is that priority number one when they're looking at the draft? Is it corner? And then what other areas do you think they could really address early on in this upcoming draft and in free agency to help bolster the roster?
Yeah, I mean, I would advise every team to just attack the secondary. You know, Arizona's already got some nice pieces with Buda Baker back there, and I like what Byron Murphy did at times, but I think you have to attack it with volume. The best teams roll three and four deep at corner and have versatile safeties. I think that is the way to build a defense. I think, you know, not having Chandler Jones this year may have hurt the pass rush a little bit, even with this Hassan Reddick breaking out. So I think you never have too many pass rushers and too many cover guys defensively. And then I think, you know, offensively, always about adding more versatile weapons. I do like what they had offensively from a weapon standpoint. I think that was a big part of Kyler Murray's development, but you can always add more pieces there and just more guys that the defense has to worry about covering. I focus on the pass game from a team building standpoint. So you want guys who can get open and guys who can cover. And I think that should be a priority again for pretty much every team in the NFL.
He is Steve Palazzolo of Pro Football Focus. They do a great job over there. He also hosts the PFF NFL podcast as well. Make sure to check that out, Steve. We appreciate the time and the insight on a very busy NFL week.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Welcome back to the Brad Sesmat Show. I'm Jordan Hamm. Thanks to Steve Palazzolo for joining us, cutting it up a little bit about the playoffs and the Cardinals. They do such a great job over at PFF, breaking everything down. It's analytics, but it's consumable. I think for some, the analytics can be a little bit intimidating, and especially in a sport like football where there's so much going on at once. Sometimes it's really hard to evaluate certain position groups like offensive line, like the secondary, that sort of thing. And they do it in a way that is easy to consume and is just really, really smart and usually pretty dead on. So appreciate him jumping on and talking about all things NFL. Let's shift gears here. College football, going to talk some ASU, some U of A as well, and then the national championship. We'll start with the big game tonight. National championship, Alabama, Ohio State. We've seen some really good games in the semifinals between Clemson and Ohio State. Ohio State, just to think back, Justin Fields takes that big hit and then just continues to just really pour it on, and in a dominating 49-28 win. And that was on New Year's Day. Just kind of getting you guys back to it. Six touchdowns, one interception, 385 yards. I don't know if you can call them getting dinged up. That was certainly more than a ding, the shot that he took. But he was able to bounce back and play really, really well. And it's kind of crazy. I feel like sometimes I have a little bit of a unique perspective, and the ones who cover recruiting have a little bit of a unique perspective, because when I'm going to the opening, when I'm going to the All-American Bowl, you see some of these guys, and every single one of them are dudes. Like, every single one of them are so good. But then you have this group of players that just separate themselves that much more. And it's just wild to see some of these players. And you can just see at the high school level, Justin Fields, he was there the year Tyler Shuck was there, Solomon Enos, Gunnar Romney was the other Arizona rep there. So that was a year I was out there. Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence were both out there, and you could just tell they were just a different breed. They came in and, you know, they could obviously make all the throws, but just the way they handled themselves, and you could tell all they knew all eyes were on them every moment, like just full stop every moment. And they handled it as teenagers, and now they're handling it as young men. And Justin Fields, I got to talk to him briefly back when it was in Oregon, and yeah, he was you could just tell, like, he was so well put together, so well spoken, just a leader. QB1 is another documentary series. It's followed around Spencer Rattler. But he was one of the first ones, and it follows him through his commitment to Georgia at the time, obviously transfers to Ohio State. This has worked out pretty well for him. But same thing with Najee Harris. I saw Devontae Smith at, a All-American practice, just absolutely just destroy people. Amon-Ra St. Brown was another one, who is now in the draft after a good career at USC. And it was just like no one could guard this dude. So it's pretty crazy to see now these guys on the big stage. But it's a 9-point spread right now. I feel like Ohio State's going to cover that. Like, I feel like this is going to be a closer game than people think. And look, Nick Saban is Nick Saban. You give him 10 days to prep for anybody, and it's going to be a problem. But Ryan Day has shown like what Ohio State can do. If you're someone who doesn't have a dog in the fight, you're an Arizona high school football fan. Lathan Ransom has gotten some playing time in the secondary at Ohio State. Jack Miller is also on that roster. And he is one of the backups for Justin Fields, but it's been cool to see Lathan get some playing time, you know, especially late. He had some big moments in I believe the Big Ten championship game. He had a big pass breakup against Clemson as well. So been cool to watch those guys. On the front of ASU and U of A, I wanted to kind of just reset because where ASU was versus where U of A was at the end of the season, where ASU was, where U of A was when Jed Fish got hired, at least the perception, I think, are very different spots. I think ASU is continuing to trend upward. They're continuing to do what they do. They finished the season well. And I think that this is going to be a season of missed opportunities, and it's not necessarily ASU's fault for some of those. Obviously, it's the COVID year. You know, you can't help when the virus attaches to somebody, and you know, those missed games, they can't, you know, what can you do about that? Missed opportunities against USC. Obviously UCLA, I thought, was a winnable game. I was at that game. And it felt like it was just like that team hadn't played in a month, because they hadn't. Once they shook the rust off a little bit and got things going, yeah, they looked pretty okay. But I think there's obviously a lot of excitement. They're adding some nice transfers. And it's wild to see just the way the transfer portal is right now. It is free agency. There are over 3,000 student athletes in the transfer portal right now. Like, that is unbelievable. And to think there haven't been that many ASU players to jump in, I think that that's a feather in ASU's cap as well. There are some players, but it feels more like playing time. The Brandon Pierces of the world, who, you know, got a little bit of time on the field at wide receiver, but he knows there are five or six freshmen coming up at that position group. And Herm has said if it's a younger guy versus an older guy, and they're neck and neck, the younger guy's going to get it because he has more time to develop. So I think that's a feather in ASU's cap a little bit to say that, hey, we got a pretty good thing going here. Now for U of A, Herm Edwards hire taught me something, just not to necessarily have the trigger reaction of good move, bad move. This is, and even for that matter, Kevin Sumlin. I thought Kevin Sumlin was going to be a much better hire than Herm Edwards. I didn't think this experiment with Herm Edwards was going to work. I was proven wrong very quickly. I know that some of my colleagues will point to the record and say, he's done a nice job, but it could be better. Yes. But what is built right now is a very different machine than what was a couple years ago. So with Jed Fish, it was, that's an offbeat name. That's an interesting name. I feel like there might be better names out there, but, and Yogi Roth also taught me this. Let him get a staff together, give him a little bit of time, and just have a little bit of patience before you have that gut reaction. What Jed Fish has shown so far is he can recruit. He can recruit coaches. He can recruit high school players. He can recruit college players. He can recruit his own players because they were hemorrhaging players left and right. They were entering the transfer portal. He's gotten a lot of those guys to come back. He's gotten the Jamari Joiners, the Booby Curries to come back. Grant Gunnell has moved on, but, you know, Majon Wright. Grant Gunnell, that it felt like he was so attached to Kevin Sumlin, that just felt like a natural thing. He's also brought in an impressive staff so far with Brennan Carroll over from the Seahawks, Jimmy Dougherty, Scotty Graham, Kevin Cummins, Jordan Pau-Pau, who was a guy, was at Oregon, was at UNLV, tight ends coach, now with U of A. And this guy can recruit. He recruited some Arizona players really well. Alex Lines, the tight end from Higley, is at UNLV mainly because of Jordan Pau-Pau. Ricky Hunley, Dwayne Walker, Chuck Cecil, you know, those types. He's also been able, the thing that has impressed me the most is he needs to make inroads in this state. He does. And what he's been able to do, if you start that, you can start this conversation at least by having guys like Gunnar Maldonado, like Drake Anderson, two former Chandler Wolves that were at Northwestern, both transferred to U of A. Jason Harris, who was at Colorado for a year, an All-American. Jalen Harris's little brother, Sean Harris's son, you know, Sharon Harris's son. He is now back with U of A. You get him in a college weight room, it's going to be, and with Don Brown, who is the defensive coordinator, whose nickname is Dr. Blitz, and they're going to have a mutant on their hands. So they've been able to keep some guys to taking their name out of the portal. I think the emotional reaction was, I'm going to get out of here. This place, Tucson is bleeding right now. But he's been able to really turn that around. Will that translate to wins? I don't know. U of A has had players, as Yogi Roth says. Has players, doesn't really have depth. They need to, this isn't going to be a one-year fix. So the patience needs to be there. The wins aren't going to be there. But I think the fact that, you know, when you heard that Jed Fish was hired and so many people were going to cancel their season tickets and this and that, and all of a sudden now there's a little bit of buzz. There's a little bit of buzz. There's a little bit of, you know, connection with the media trying to get the word out, which I think is very wise. That's what Todd Graham did when he took over kind of a similar situation once Dennis Erickson left. And he's trying to build some goodwill and trying to just give his guys a chance. Obviously a lot's going to happen. The roster is going to continue to take shape. Who knows who's going to be at quarterback? Will it be Will Plummer? Will it be somebody else? I don't know. It's not going to be all of a sudden there at the top of the Pac-12, but what he's been able to do in the span of maybe 17 days has been pretty darn impressive. So, coming up next, we're going to talk, a little bit more about what we saw this weekend and, just looking ahead. That's coming up next on the Brad Sessmatt Show. Welcome back to the Brad Sessmatt Show. I'm Jordan Hamm. We've talked a lot about the good that has happened this weekend. But one thing that came out this week on the Arizona sports scene is winter sports for the AIA has been canceled. And that I feel for those student athletes so much. Last year, they barely got to wrap up their season before COVID really hit. And they were able to complete the season. And I think that was miraculous timing for them. We saw with spring sports that didn't happen. Fall sports greatly impacted as well. And I hope that there's a way that they can find a way to do it safely. I've seen a lot of outrage. I've seen a lot of frustration. And I think those feelings are valid. I think the AIA is doing the best it can right now. And that this is a situation that no one has been able to tackle, or no one has tackled before. And with that comes a lot of uncertainty, a lot of like trying to build protocols into that, trying to build into when there are student athletes that are outside, how does that impact them versus inside? And they're doing what they can. I know there's a lot of outrage. I know there's a lot of frustration. If I was a high school student athlete and my season got canceled, you know, I played baseball back in the day. And if my baseball season was taken away from me, I would have been a wreck. And I get that. And I get the frustration with the parents, from parents and from coaches and, you know, the start and stop. And I do not envy where the AIA is right now. They're having another special joint session, I believe is the terminology, tomorrow, to maybe revisit this, maybe revote, maybe put the schools in essentially off-season mode is what I've also heard, where they could still scrimmage, they could still work out together, that sort of thing. So it's, I believe the AIA has is doing what they can to get the athletes back on the mat, on the court, on the field, wherever it may be. But I also understand the frustration of this. So, I don't know the right answer. I don't know. I think everyone's situation is different. For certain families, this can be, probably what's best for them. For certain ones, this can be the worst thing that can happen to them. So I don't know what the right decision is. I will say this, just do your part. Just wear your mask, social distance. I know we're at the point in the pandemic where it just gets beaten into your head, where it's effectiveness. It maybe not even be there anymore. But I think there has been a lot of lax behavior by some, and that can be impacting it. So if you're doing those things, keep at it. If you're not, I encourage you to do so. Because I want this thing to go away for a lot of reasons, but I also want these student athletes to be able to have their seasons and go get that high school experience as full as we can right now. Because they've had to endure a lot. Whenever people say that kids can't deal with adversity anymore, like that's bull crap. Like, look what these student athletes are doing. Look what all of these students are doing. These young people, they're dealing with a lot more than I had to deal with in high school. And I thought that, there were times I was stressed out in high school, and this doesn't sniff it. And the way most of them have been able to handle it. And even if they're not handling it well, that's understandable, but they've dealt with enough adversity. I am confident that if the AIA can find a safe way to do that, they're going to do that. So a lot's going to change, I'm sure, in the next 24 hours on where they stand with high school sports for winter. And hopefully that can happen, and hopefully spring, and hopefully, you know, with the vaccine, we can kind of try to, you know, get past this chapter. And we can just look back 30 years from now and be like, remember that weird year where we had to work from home and do all this crazy stuff? Hopefully it gets to that, and hopefully a lot of good comes out of this. So I'm going to get off of my high school sports soapbox, but I appreciate Steve Palazzolo for joining us. Appreciate all of you for tuning in. This is the Brad Sesmat Show, and I am Jordan Hamm. Everybody have a great week.